So happy it's Thursday. Welcome to ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. Feels good to be back.
Man, does it feel good to be back.
I think I'm still full.
A lot has happened since we've been gone.
A lot has happened. I have had my full of turkey, I guarantee you that. Obviously, last Thursday was Thanksgiving. We weren't here, but enjoyed ourselves anyway.
Absolutely.
For all of our past shows, you can find on our website, pricelesshome.com. Also, the newly acquired domain, therealestateradiohour.com, YouTube, or on iTunes.
One of my personal favorites.
Oh, which one?
iTunes.
Oh, iTunes. Okay. Awesome. Today's show, business and real estate. Going to make some analogies of the two, and we've got two business professionals in here. We've got George Samuels with George Samuels and Associates. He's a certified public accountant. But he promises he's not going to cite any form numbers.
Not today.
Not
it's tough to get these accountants away from those form numbers, but he promises.
Maybe a few code sections here and there.
But not only that, he's really the profit coach.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm interested in,
That's what he's talking about. He is your financial fitness guru, and he's going to run through exactly what that means. Additionally, Kevin Day with Day & Associates Incorporated, an estate planning and international asset protection law attorney, but I'm going to call him the asset protection guru.
There you go.
Guru, absolutely.
Guru. Gentlemen, welcome, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Well, we have some good news in the newspaper, and frankly, it seems like I've been reporting more good news in the housing market of recent than bad news, which is good news.
Yeah, good news. Why not? I mean, we're now at a all-time low with interest rates. So, I mean, we're peaking at some of the lows right now, and some of the rules behind getting loans these days are being lifted.
Well, funny you say that, because we're actually going to talk about one that got unlifted. Maybe that would be closed. And slightly closed. FHA changed the rules a little bit, made it a little bit harder, but, you know, minimal stuff. Minimal stuff. But we'll start with the good news. Mortgage defaults dip to a six-year low. So defaults are, of course, the way the people, I don't know, whoever's tracking this, what is this, Zillow, DataQuick. DataQuick is tracking.
All trustworthy, right?
Yeah, that's where DataQuick is tracking how healthy the real estate market is. And obviously, when people are defaulting, that means they're at least 90 days late. And six-year low last month. So carry the one, 2012. That means 2006 was the last time we were talking at similar mortgage default amounts.
Makes a lot of sense. In 2006, I mean, a lot of agents were scrambling to find those REO asset managers to get a hold of those assets to sell them. These days, that party's over.
Yeah, it kind of seems to me like it's more evidence, empirical evidence, statistical evidence, that there's a net deflux in additional defaults, and maybe we are actually looking in the rearview mirror at a bad economy. Are you guys seeing economic changes shift in your business that would drive one way or another?
It depends what radio station or television channel I'm watching on TV.
Good enough.
That's true. I mean, you listen to one guru. One says, hey, I predict the market's going to go down 20%. You listen to another one. He says, hey, I think the market's going up 20%. It really depends on your sources. But the sources that we've been tapping into, in fact, we look at about 211 banks. All of them are actually saying that they're expecting real estate to go up in value over the next year. I mean, if it's even just 5% and some as aggressive as 10%.
Well, I don't look at the statistics, but from my clients, over the last 5 years, we've had these people that have lots of money, that they're actually doing well because of this economy, and they've been holding on to their cash, and they've been saying, we're looking for when the real estate is way down, but we don't know how far it's going to go.
Sure.
And I've been telling people when it's not going to jump up to where it was before, but it's going to jump up because these people are going to jump in with their money. And my clients are coming in for me to form lawsuit protection and real estate holding entities like we haven't seen in 5 years because they're starting to buy real property.
And you mean more? More people are coming in looking for those reforms because they're buying rental property.
Correct.
Got it.
Yep. So, Kevin, I have a question for you. You deal with the mega wealthy people.
No, we deal with everybody. Little grandmas.
But you have a lot of people that have substantial.
Yeah, we do have big clients.
Substantial
as well,
assets. Yeah. What are the people that have these substantial assets doing right now? Are they thinking, I'm going to buy real estate? Is that what you're saying?
That's what they're doing. You know, I'm hearing back, you know, just 5 or 6 months ago, there were 300 houses on the market. And now there's 13. They've already gone up 30%, 20%. So they're all ticked that they've
The gold
missed.
Rush.
It's still way down and it's going to be a
sure.
while, but it's happening from what I'm seeing my clients come into my office.
And
with.
that cash flow type property is going to be your lower end, let's say sub 400, sub $500,000 property. Because a $1 million home, for the most part, is not gonna, the numbers aren't going to be right there. So you got to get it low enough. And that lower end market, and I say lower end with finger quotes that don't work real well on the radio, but finger quotes because anywhere other than San Diego, $400,000 to $500,000 is not low end.
Right.
I mean, that's, you can buy a lot in many areas. So when we get in that marketplace, it's super impacted.
Yeah.
Right. No, and I've got several clients, rental real estate, especially in the Arizona, Phoenix area. They just can't get an offer in fast enough.
Yeah, it's a real interesting market because we've got people that are still upside down that are deciding to short sell their property. So you've got this inventory that comes out that's low and at giveaway prices. And yet you've got the homeowner that is either on the fence with equity or they've got equity where they're wanting to maximize their returns. You've got this real dichotomy between short sale and traditional sale. And you've got the investor buyer out there going, hey, I want prices that were happening a year ago, and they find themselves in situations where there's multiple offers, you know, and they're kicking themselves because they wish they could have bought it a year ago.
Right, right.
So just to put some numerical values on this, in October, and I'm guessing this is a San Diego County statistic, in October, 958 notice of defaults were filed. That's the first step in the foreclosure process.
Is that federal?
San Diego,
okay.
San Diego. Oh, yeah, we'd be doing way better if that was national. Okay. San Diego, which is down a few percentages from September. But more importantly, all the way back in 2006, we were talking about that same numbers. 800 and change were filed in the same month of October of 2006. So we're still looking at 1,000-ish people are in trouble a month. So it's not done. I mean, by no means is it done. That's a lot of people that need to find a way to solve their financial problem. But we're down 25% from the figure in 2011. So in 2011, we were looking at some 200 to 300 more notice of default filings per month or in the month of October in 2011. So we are seeing a substantial improvement from the number 1 year ago.
So I think what you're saying when I'm painting a mental picture of this here is that in 2005, we had about 1,000 notice of defaults per month in the county.
2006, yeah.
And it
October.
It obviously got worse.
Oh, yeah.
It got a lot worse. And now we're on the upside of this sine wave. So,
according to this, it peaked in March of 2009 with 3,832 notice of default filings in 1 month. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
So we rode the wave up. Man, we rode the wave down, and hopefully it'll continue down, and the down being the notice of default filings.
I tell you what, it just pains me to hear that because I know that each and every single one of those notice of defaults is a homeowner that is all in, you know, that's sitting there going, "What? How am I going to make my mortgage payment?" You know, these are real people out there having real tough times. In fact, you know, I remember trick-or-treating with my kid a couple years ago, and like every fourth house, the yard was dead. You know, because people weren't watering their lawn, you know, and it's really a sign of the times. And I'm frankly excited to hear that the notice of defaults are really down.
It's a good indication. I told you I had one good one and one bad one, but frankly, my bad one isn't so bad. FHA has tightened up their lending rules, which when I tell you how much they tightened them, you'll be like, why are you bothering with this? Right. I mean, they've tightened it such a minuscule amount. But what I think What I want to point out is the fact that because of the tightening, it becomes evidence that they're doing something to continue to keep FHA alive. So there's not going to need to be a Fannie or Freddie type bailout for the FHA system. And so just to give you some idea, as it is right now, 1.25% insurance premium is required when you get an FHA mortgage. And just for everybody out there that's been living under a rock for the last 3 years, what's the benefit of an FHA mortgage?
Well, you only have to put 3% down. 3.5%, but however, there's mortgage insurance involved.
Right.
So, you know, this is what you're talking about.
And mortgage insurance in this case now costs 1.25%. You pay it up front. Commonly, it's rolled into the loan. So if you're getting a loan for $400,000, 1.25%, you're talking an extra $5,000. But now they're raising that to 1.35%. You know, whatever. Big deal. Let's throw it into the mix. $400,000. What's another $200? Big deal. There's plenty of junk fees you see on that statement. Another thing is they are not letting people refinance. They're not letting people simply drop the mortgage insurance when they reach 78% LTV. Currently, when they hit that 78% or 80% LTV, they'll let the homeowner stop paying mortgage insurance because there's 20% equity in the home. No longer the case. You got to pay for the duration of the loan, duration of the time you have that loan. Another way that
FHA, or you got to refinance out of it.
Or refinance out of it, but if your rate's 2.5%, 2.75%,
you're going to keep it.
You're going to keep it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what they're banking on. So, you know, frankly, not that bad. The helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. Remember, I'm not going to answer. You're talking to me. It's going to ring my cell phone. You got to leave me a message. 888-551-2593. David, have you been stretching? I know I've been stretching. When we come back, my financial fitness trainer is going to work at the studio.
Financial coach.
My financial coach, George Samuels. Looking forward to it. When we come back. Welcome back. Happy Thursday. ESPN 1700 AM. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour with your host,
David McKelvin.
And myself, Ryan White. In studio with us today, Kevin Day, our
Hello.
Asset planning guru.
And the profit coach.
And the profit coach, Joe.
Make
Samuels.
Us profitable.
Make us profitable. Okay, George, you promised no form numbers.
No form numbers. You know, you promised.
We want the bottom line.
You promised I'd be talking to Chris Berman. He has his ESPN radio. And
well, he's probably listening.
And all I have is a Conan look.
He couldn't make it. You didn't get the message?
Can you go going all the way? That's what I wanted to hear from ESPN.
So I think most people have an idea of what a CPA does. But really, that's not your role. I mean, you do that. But
well, yeah,
you do that.
As a byproduct, I do tax returns
right.
And all the regular stuff that everybody thinks. But I do, somebody once said as they introduced me, they said, well, he's got too much of a personality to be any good. So how good of an accountant could he be? but when it comes to
a CPA with a personality.
There you go. But heck, you know, I listened to 10 minutes of you guys. You know, I promised I wouldn't quote code sections and things like that, but I heard more FHA stats up, down, left, right.
Well, this is a real estate show.
In the real estate market.
It's hard not to, right?
So you got to give me a little leash here. But I've been doing this for quite a while. And one of the questions, interestingly, that you asked initially, well, do you think the market's going up? Do you think the market's going down? And to be candidly, kind of the guy, the coach on the sidelines over the last 20, 25 years, I've seen people going up, going down. And it's much more fun when they're going up. Everybody's got smiles on their face and they're happy and they've got cash. You know, when things are going down, it's all man head for the lifeboats. But the interesting thing is, you know, just as I turn the radio on coming over here about this fiscal cliff and all this, you know, everybody gets all hyped up on what you hear. But the reality is, from a business standpoint, every day there's businesses starting up. There's a ton of businesses starting up every day and a whole bunch going out of business. But the reality it is, it depends how you structure your business and what how you innovate your business, whether or not you'll succeed. And that's a key difference. You know, candidly, I think most business owners are asleep at the switch. I think 60% of business owners are just taking up oxygen. You know, if they could only leave it for the rest of us, then we all make a good living.
Well, that brings you a good point. Tell me what a profit coach does. Tell me what a profit coach does.
Okay, well, the profit coach basically works with people to try to leverage what they have and, in simple terms, get the most out of what they got, you know. And the reality is, and how you structure that, most people go into business because they're good at what they do. The attorney's good at being an attorney, so he says, geez, he's billing me out at $400 an hour. I could probably work on my own at $250 an hour. In your case, maybe we'll have to double these numbers. But, you know, and the
triple them, right, Kevin?
And the guy working in the car shop says, I'm going to open up my own repair shop. You know, I don't want to work for this jerk, and I can do it and much better. And so the candlestick maker goes into the bakery business. You know, so they're all good at what they do. They're very good at what they do. But the reality is running the business oftentimes, for the most part, whether you're a realtor, same thing. The business is different than the work itself.
So the widget maker may be great at making widgets, but not so great at running a widget making factory. And that's where you come in.
Absolutely. And I go in and we work very closely normally with people that have free cash flow of, say, $100,000, want to get to the next level of income, say, up to $200,000 or more. It depends how you scale this thing. But, you know, with five or more employees, they're the ones that need my services the most. And by going in and looking at their business and looking what the economic drivers of the business and what and being customer focused on what drives the business, because again, if you focus on the customers, then your business will take care of itself.
So you mentioned a car repair shop, yeah, in your situation, or excuse me, a mechanic. Right. What? Give me an example. What do you do? I mean, I go to the gym. I lift weights, right? What do you do? What's your weightlifting task?
You lift weights?
I know. Believe it or not, I do. This morning, actually.
Cool. This is a radio station. We'll have to take your word for it.
No one can see him, right?
That's right.
It's Conan the Barbarian. Yeah, okay. Give me a second here before I get to the car repair shop. But it is very similar. You talk about the going into the fitness center. I've been there for the last 4 years, and oftentimes I see people with all the best of intentions, and they get their trainer, and they last for 2-3 weeks, and you know, they're gone. You know, then there's those that stick it out, and they're the ones that you know, I walk 16-minute mile today, and the next week it's a 14-minute mile. Then they start jogging, and then they start running, and pretty soon they're down to a 9-minute mile, and they're doing 5Ks, 10Ks. It's setting the goal, setting the task at hand. And those that set that goal, it's somewhat like a business plan. You know, millionaires are those that have a business plan. Billionaires are those that write it down. That's kind of the same.
I've heard that somewhere.
That's good.
You know, so it's a very fluid situation, but it's one that you have to keep working at it. And it constantly changes. It's really a lot more nuanced than appears on the front end. And for example, if you the car repair shop, I remember going to them initially, and they were telling me that they were just at loose ends trying to figure out how to grow the business, that they just didn't have the advertising budget that people would normally think to go out and spend a lot of money. Cash was king and always is in a business, and so they were looking for ways to grow and yet in a very conservative way. And so what we did was looked at the whole enterprise from a very customer-focused standpoint. From the moment they had the initial contact came in to the time when the person would call back, that moment of truth of, okay, here's your estimate, you know, and the scripting of how they handled that, it made a large difference because oftentimes in businesses we go into these things and one day Sally or Jim is answering the phone and we get excellent service. The next a week later we call back and it's somebody else and it's like, geez, this is not the same kind of business, and it just doesn't create that wow factor.
So, George, I think what you're saying is, you know, you've got a business owner who's gotten into business for whatever reason, and maybe they're in business and they're in the trees and they can't see the forest, and they're making a decision rather than to run the same advertising that they've run before, which hasn't worked, and their business is struggling, to, in a sense, hire someone like yourself to come in and coach them through the different things that you can see, showing them the forest, and saying, look, here's what I think you should do. This is going to make you more profitable.
Absolutely. It does require going up to the 30,000-foot level and looking down at the operation and really looking at the drivers of the business,
because
the value added. Because
a lot of these business owners, they're running a marathon every day. They get up in the morning at dark 30. They go to work. They're running around.
They're doing it all the way to midnight.
And next thing you know, they're 30 years in the business, and they're like, they got nothing to show for it.
That's if they make it to 30 years because
But I mean, yeah, well, you know, and I'm sure that there's a frustrated business owner out there right now that says, wait a second, I've written down my goals. How come I'm not the millionaire? How come I'm not the billionaire? I mean, obviously, there's got to be more to it than just putting down a business plan and taking action.
It's execution, but it's looking at the right things. It's not much like that. If we all saw the movie Moneyball, this is a sports station, so I'll throw that out here. But it's my understanding that the essence of that Moneyball movie was the Oakland A's, and they were looking at the old school measurements of what makes a good ball player. And then the Oakland A's new management came along, and they started focusing on different things, and they found out they could compete with a $25 million payroll versus the New York Yankees of $125 million payroll.
So what you're saying is you've got an old school way of possibly doing business versus a new way of doing business with all the technology that's available.
And you mentioned the technology, especially with the technology and computers and databases. Getting back to all businesses, there's only three or four ways to grow a business. And it's all about lead generation, lead conversion, and fulfillment. And most people, when they're working with their accountants and CPAs, are looking at the wrong side of the profit equation. They're looking at the expenses. Well, as we're sitting in this room, you know, you can only tweak these lights so much and save 10%, and pretty soon you're cutting into your revenue factor. So it's important to measure these things, because there's a saying, what gets measured gets done, and what you can measure you can manage, and what you can manage you can leverage. In business, when you cut to the core of it all, is all about leverage. And
you know, you mentioned something really good to me when we were in the green room, if you will, waiting.
Sure.
Was really the ability for a business to keep score.
You know, that
seems like, to boil all this down, I mean, you're still a numbers guy, right? And keeping score, there's going to be some numbers involved. So it kind of seems like your niche is going to allow the business to keep score and allow people to know, A, what they should be doing and make them do it, but B, understanding what they should be doing based on what is going to work. And I think that keeping score attribute is one of the best things you can bring to the table.
Absolutely. And who's going to keep the score? Well, your customers are going to tell you. They're going to give you the immediate feedback. And your team members, the frontline people, are going to tell you what's working and what's not working. A certain key performance indicator in most businesses is the lifetime value of a customer. Owners recognize what that is. You know, take a restaurant. Guy comes in, four times a year, spends $100. They know what the lifetime value is. It comes on an average of 4 years. You know, but the wait staff, they don't really realize that. When somebody comes in and cheeses them off, they think, oh, my gosh, you know, that's $20 we lost. What the heck? Well,
sure.
No, you just lost a $4,000 customer. So
right.
It's looking at these value-added propositions within your business and looking at those five key things.
And it kind of seems like you're willing to meet with a business owner struggling, or let's say not struggling, but wanting to and prepared to take his business to the next level. You know, you do
yeah,
free consultations.
That's a very good stand. You're right. Taking it to the next level. That is the key right there. And it's people that want to grow their capital within that have the ability to get to the next level.
Awesome. Well, so we're giving away a free consultation with the Profit Coach. Helpline here, 888-551-2593. That's the number. 888-551-2593. Nobody's going to call you and harass you. Leave your information. The Profit Coach will help work you out. When we come back, I'm going to have him go through the three major needs of any business, and we'll get sweaty when he comes back.
Welcome back to ESPN 1700, the Real Estate Radio Hour, with your host,
Ryan White,
and David McKelvin. We are here with Kevin Day.
Hello.
Kevin Day comes to us from Day & Associates Estate Planning, and we're here with George Samuels, accountant and the profit coach.
Business development expert.
Oh, okay. There He's got go. Some statistics for us, right? See? You're going to show us how businesses keep score.
How they keep score and how it compares with the NFL. This is ESPN, and I did take off the ESPN website and the San Diego Chargers 2012 statistics.
Oof. And I wear my hat every day, and
I get
in trouble every now and then.
I mean, I wish statistics were better.
So maybe we shouldn't pick the Chargers.
No.
I'm staying away from the numbers, but these are the things that the insiders look at, that as opposed to me, when I look at the big screen TV.
What they measure.
I see the hike, I see the ball, I see the pass, I see the catch, I see the tackle, I see the commercials. That's all I see, but I'm not a big football guy. But if you look at what the insiders and the coaches, I mean, they analyze this stuff up the yin-yang. Things carries over 20 yards, rushing yards, rushing attempts, receiving yards per game, receptions over 20 yards, third down conversions, assisted tackles, sacks, yards lost on sacks, interceptions, kickoff return yards. And this is just one of several pages of stats that are tracked all the time. And the key in business is not to get lost in the forest or in the trees, but to actually pick the five or four key things that are driving your business today, and in a very pragmatic way, and measure those. Because there's basically three ways to grow a business, and one of them is through customer acquisition and retention, how to lead generation, lead conversion, measuring and monitor those things, average sale value, what upsells you can give. The king of franchises, McDonald's, you know, has made billions off of "Would you like fries with this?" That's kind of a very simplistic concept, but it's a granddaddy of upsells. And then the most killer one from a numbers standpoint is what I call the frequency of which you come back. If you're in a restaurant, if you can stimulate, if you guys are in the real estate business, if you could only get people to buy real estate every 2 years instead of once every 7 years, you're on to something. And it's the same thing in most businesses, whether you're a distributor or whether you're a retailer or a restaurant, same concept. Get them to come by one more time per quarter, and your profits will triple. Literally, it's not one big thing. It's a bunch of little small things, the little 2%ers. 3 2%ers will add up to 10%. I mean, it's stunning what you can do to leverage and geometrically grow your business.
I have noticed that it's the little things that we do that make the biggest difference. But, you know, tying it back into what you said, I love the statistics of what the coaches are looking at with the NFL. I mean, I absolutely love it. But when you said choose three, is that what you're saying? Or
I choose more, but the goal is not to get overwhelmed with the situation, and to get the team meaning the frontline people, the owner, the managers, focused on the key driver of the business and getting the work in concert, not getting the business systemized, not personality driven, which is what 80% of most businesses are. It's the secretary in the front that rules the roost.
So if I'm a business owner out there with the appropriate mindset of wanting to take my business to the next level, you offer consultation, right, for
absolutely.
Free consultation with the Profit Coach, free training session, if you will, with your financial fitness guru, George Samuels. You're here in Solana Beach.
What I'll take you through is those three ways to grow your business, not in a very detailed way, but a hypothetical, if we did this, if we did that, give me your financials, and we can just say what if for the half hour to an hour. And if it makes sense in a results-driven way, then we're on to something. If it doesn't, I'd be the first to say, hey, good luck.
And so the website, profitcoach.net.
profitcoach.net.
Also the helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593.
That's Profit Coach, profitcoach, not prophet.
Oh.
I mean, some people think I'm a prophet.
Ah, got it. Profit as in money.
There you go.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, I have one more question for George before you go. I mean, the thing that it comes to mind is that there's obviously a lot of businesses out there that need your services, but you're really looking for that business that is the diamond in the rough.
Yes.
You're looking for that business owner that says, you know what, I'm feeling good about where I'm going, but I really want to take it to the next level. Not the guy that's can't make his rent right now. You want that guy that actually can move things around and make it happen.
Correct. There's certain fundamentals that have to be done. You have to grab hold of the numbers. You have to have financial statements. So that kind of rules out 70% of businesses right there. But you know, if you have a basic set of financial statements that you work with, and you look at the numbers, then we can take it to the next level.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you very much. I appreciate you coming in and taking the time, George.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, Kevin Day here from Day & Associates is with us, and I don't know if you guys are involved in trusts or offshore trusts or offshore accounts, but this guy is the guy to really talk to. So, Kevin, could you enlighten us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, we're estate planners at heart, but I wrote a bunch of books back in the early 90s on offshore asset protection trusts, domestic trusts. And so what we do is work with clients that have assets that they want to segregate from their personal liability, from their tenants' liability, from employee liability, service or merchandise liability. So we can work with really large clients, obviously, but we have small entrepreneurs. A lot of our clients are maybe 1 million to 5 million, you know, estate clients. And that's kind of where they're waking up when their business is growing, their estate is growing, where they search out professionals like you, search out professionals like George. And when they come to us, that's when we can develop a game plan. Sometimes they say, great, here's a check, let's do all of it, and then which we always love. But a lot of the time it's saying, this is the perfect scenario, but it's not in my budget yet. What are the baby steps to get there? What can I put into place that will lawsuit proof my estate?
Yeah, we're talking about asset protection right now, and one of the things I think is makes you the guru is mm-hmm. the offshore trusts that we talked about. Now, we're not talking about offshore accounts. Like when you first mentioned that to me, I remember seeing in the Caymans, you know, the big banks and everything
right.
else, you know.
Right.
That's kind of a thing of the past right now. People are not moving so much of their assets offshore as much as they're taking their assets and putting it in offshore trusts.
No, there's going to be a business purpose with that. We have people that are doing manufacturing in China or something like that where that's appropriate. But the lion's share of our clients are what they're doing is importing foreign law under U.S. law to change the playing field. And it's a huge game player.
So they're essentially taking their game off the field and putting it overseas.
Exactly. And this might be a little bit too much of a statistics, but what happened is in 1984, the U.S. signed the Hague Convention on Trusts. And in short form, it says U.S. persons can establish trust in other countries, and that law prevails. It's really strong language in the U.S. law. And which we'll flush out in a minute, there's a lot of advantages to that law.
So I suspect that, yeah, when I take my assets offshore, I'm getting use of laws that benefit me better, or I wouldn't be doing this. What are some of the advantages and tweaks and laws that I get?
Yeah. And I want to adjust a little bit about the semantics. Unfortunately, I am a lawyer, so I've got to deal with it. We're usually not moving assets offshore.
Excuse me.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring that up, right? Because whenever you say that, I think you're literally moving assets.
No.
And we're not talking about doing that at all.
No, we're importing foreign law. We're not exporting assets. Most of the world sees the U.S. as the most stable economy and country in the world. They're investing in us. You want to keep your assets here. But what we do with what happened with that law in 1984, the treaty that we signed, which is superior to federal law, treaties, conventions, and presidential decrees. The only thing bigger than that is the Constitution itself. So it's very powerful law. And it was a game changer. To have a lawsuit-proof trust in the United States, traditionally, you had to, I'm going to take mom and dad, nuclear family, had to give away assets to your children in an irrevocable trust, and the original mom and dad, the original owners, couldn't be the trustee or couldn't be the beneficiaries. They had to give up all ownership and control. Entrepreneurs don't like that at all. Well, in the international world, there are countries that say, oh, our irrevocable trust is defined this way, and you can still be the beneficiary. Entrepreneurs love that. So I'm not going to legally own it. So if I lose a lawsuit, I'm deposed under penalty of perjury, list everything you own. It's everything over here in my left hand, not what's in my right hand, and you're not committing perjury. It's the truth. And I can get all my stuff back when I want. I can have it spent on me. They
so you
love
can
that.
Have your cake and eat it,
you
too.
You can have Absolutely. Your cake and eat it.
It exists.
Yeah. So now, like all good entrepreneurs who are control freaks at their heart, that's how they become successful, right? They don't want to give up control. And they finally, they've heard enough about Rockefeller. I don't want to own it. I want to control it. So they can get over the concept of the irrevocable trust with them as a beneficiary. But how can I control it? We do that with underlying entities.
The helpline, 888-551-2593. That's the number, 888-551-2593. Kevin, your website, it is day-law.com, day-law.com. I'm sure they can find more information.
Lots of information, lots of FAQs.
So when we come back, we're going to apply a little bit of this to real estate. I mean, that's what we're here to talk about.
Absolutely.
Let's use that as our analogy, and we'll find out how Kevin is going to use his mumbo-jumbo, his guru-ness to apply
to protect.
Asset protection to real estate. Welcome back, 1700 AM, ESPN. It's the Real Estate Radio Hour. We're here with Kevin Day, Day & Associates. Just to continue where we left off there a little bit, I've got an entrepreneur that wants to keep control of his assets. And let's say he owns a couple houses, his primary, maybe a couple rental properties, car, boat. Let's apply all your techniques. How is it that you would suggest you can protect his assets?
Yeah. That kind of client, and that's one of the first things that we look at is kind of net worth. We're not going to really be looking at an offshore trust unless their estate is at least $1.5 million and probably $2 million, because they're not inexpensive. But there's domestic versions that we can do, that we can create the lawsuit protection platform. The basics of lawsuit protection is if you don't own it, it can't be taken. Mm-hmm. And what entrepreneurs do at the seat of their pants, contractors, developers, physicians, certain groups that have lawsuits all the time, they make a cash investment, put it in their sister-in-law's name, or somebody with a lower lawsuit profile.
Do they put it in their child's name?
Well, they can, but then you have gift tax issues. They have a teenage driver now that takes their assets. And so that's where these irrevocable trusts, whether they're offshore or domestic, come in. They create a separate legal owner. And in our legal system, there's only two ultimate owners, a flesh and blood human. Nobody owns you, and nobody owns an irrevocable trust. Corporations, LLCs, limited partnerships can own things, but a corp can be owned by an LLC. It has to have a shareholder, member, partner. It will go corp until it hits a human or hits you. That's what we want to take advantage of. We want to create a separate third-party legal owner with an offshore trust or a domestic equivalent so that our client can then say, I don't own those things that are the good things. And my company with my employees or my tenants, real estate's interesting because it's high value, but it's also high liability. How do we protect those? Well, going back to that control issue, none of our entrepreneurs want to be like a Kennedy or Carnation grandchild and go, hey, please, Mr. and Miss Trustee, buy this, sell that. So what we do is create the trust, put it on the shelf, and have it own an underlying company. We have a bunch of different strategies, but this works for the majority of our clients. We'll create a lending company, essentially a lending company that's a family piggy bank. It's not going to have their name on it. they're legally not going to own it because it's owned by the trust for their benefit, but they can control it. Controlling the underlying company does not frustrate the legal premise of how lawsuit-proof trusts work. So if they control Black Mountain Financial that has the $30,000 that they're about, they would have taken out of their right pocket to put down on some property, they're going to put it in their right pocket, Black Mountain Financial, write the check, get the down, bank gives them the money, Bank of America, Union Bank goes on first. As soon as the smoke clears, Black Mountain Financial's on second. And it was a real transaction. It is a secured creditor that they don't own. So if somebody wants to sue them, there's no equity in that asset.
Right, you've equity stripped it.
Equity stripped, but to themselves. And it's real. We're going to create the real consideration that would be supported in law if it's all looked at. I shouldn't be telling clients something behind closed doors that I'd be embarrassed to tell the judge. Well, what do commercial lenders do? Oh, well, that house might burn down. Are you willing to personally guarantee it or maybe put the equity in your home on the line? Absolutely, because it's you. So you can use this Black Mountain Financial to lawsuit-proof your boat, your personal home equity, your rental properties, and springboard all of it. It's completely scalable. The client that you were talking about just a moment ago with the 15 mm-hmm. properties. You have 15 properties, you can have 100 properties. This works for my clients that have $86 million. It works for the clients that have $1 million. Somebody with $1 million or $2 million estate, if they get a lawsuit, it is more devastating than somebody with a $40 million estate that gets mm-hmm. a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So they almost need the protection more. It's something that can grow, and every time the property sells or they're getting rental, what do? They pay that debt. So it ends up being their pocketbook or, their purse, and it's going to be lawsuit-proof and completely defendable.
So, we had George Samuels in here earlier, and he talked about when the economy goes down and everybody goes running for their lifeboat, what you're really talking about is that if there's somebody out there that wants to protect themselves so that they have a lifeboat to go to.
This is it.
And you don't necessarily have to do this when it's happening. You do this before it's happening, preferably.
Absolutely. Just like insurance, it's hard to buy insurance when the fire is coming up the canyon and you're up there with the hose. So you want to do it when your legal seas are calm. But we've actually had 100% success with rescues over the last 5 years. We've had a lot of people. I'm upside down on these two properties. I know I'm going to get a deficiency. I've got three properties with a lot of equity. It's low-hanging fruit. What can I do? We have to be concerned about fraudulent conveyance. I'm not going to let the clients go over that line. I'm not going to go over that line with them. But we have done structuring that they don't even get deficiency notices, or they are able to negotiate phenomenal settlements, because usually the banks are peddling so fast to try to find who does have money. They don't want to waste a bunch of legal fees on chasing somebody that doesn't. If we can make our client look like a turnip on mm-hmm. those good properties, sometimes some of them don't even get a deficiency.
That makes sense. Doesn't that go for pretty much anybody? I mean, you've got somebody who looks like they don't have any money. They don't get sued as often as the guy that looks like he really does, or if he does have money, or that
exactly.
low-hanging fruit out there.
Exactly. Especially with contingency fee lawyers, they're signing up to be business partners. They're not just going to say, oh, this looks
right.
like a great case, I'm going to run it. They're going to say, let's investigate. Well, they own a couple of properties, but there isn't any equity there. I'm sorry, I can't take your case.
That's when that lawsuit self-evaluation test
yep.
comes into play. Can
yep.
you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have a little exam. It's actually really productive. Most people can kind of think, yeah, I've got this liability, that liability, but they isolate each one of those liabilities. And they don't think, oh, yeah, I have a couple of shareholders, or I have five employees. Oh, I have a teenage driver in my household now. I have rental property. All these little things. We have essentially 30 questions, and you can get your quotient. We have the little exam on it of whether you are average risk, low risk, above average risk, high risk, or extreme risk. Some people end up being lower than they thought, and they can ease up, to cool the jets. And other people go, wow, I didn't think of them cumulatively. I better do something.
So give me an example of a question. What can I expect to be asked on your quiz here?
Well, actually, that was a couple of them that I just asked employees.
Do I have employees?
Do you have employees? Do you have employees that operate equipment? Do you have employees that have company cars?
See.
Do you
I
own
see.
Real property? Are you in any joint ventures? What's your income? Just because of higher income, there are people that attack
higher income. So you're breaking down all the elements that would be in someone's life to give them a score, if you will, a liability score, as far as determining how much protection they need, or really if they need protection at all, or should they start talking to somebody about it?
Exactly. Lawsuit protection really comes down to some people only need a little picket fence to keep the neighbor boy from running through the roses. And others need the picket fence, the moat, the wall, the castle, and a couple of catapults. So we want to evaluate that, let the client know what they can do and how they can grow into what the perfect plan would be for them ultimately.
So to get a hold of Kevin's lawsuit liability handbook, that's what I'm going to call it here.
The LLC.
LLH.
LLH.
The helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, I'm not going to answer. Leave your email address, 888-551-2593. I'll email it to you. Let you evaluate your personal liability or your liability yourself and determine if you need some type of protection. Maybe you don't, but, I mean, frankly, hopefully you do, because that means you've got some assets.
Right.
You're much better off if you have something to protect.
Yes.
Also, Kevin's website, day-law.com. One more time, day-law.com.
Day-law.com.
I want to say thanks to Kevin Day for being here. It's good information. Asset protection is a very important part of our society today.
Wonderful being on the show. Thank you, David. Thank you, Ryan.
Well, until next week, again, the helpline, 888-551-2593. Again, 888-551-2593. See you next week.
See you next week.